Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Patient-Focused Update with Americans for Safe Access. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today is Chief Science Officer Dr. Jehan Marku. Dr. Marku, welcome back.
Thank you, Russ. It's good to be back. There's been a lot of things going on in the world of medical cannabis.
Absolutely. And as we head into the winter months, there's all sorts of events and training we need to tell people about. But I just got back from the Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference, and one of the major topics there was the opioid overdose crisis. We're looking at 60,000 people losing their lives in 2016 due to overdose on opiates. And we've also seen the data, the surveys, the studies coming out showing that medical marijuana, medical cannabis can be a help in this particular regard. So could we talk a little bit about that, the opioid crisis and medical cannabis, how that intersects and maybe what Americans for Safe Access has to offer?
Yes. So as you know, this is an issue that affects a lot of people. It's estimated that 100 million Americans suffer from some form of chronic pain, of which, you know, they may have been prescribed opioid or an opioid-based medication for long-term use. And the issue here is that with some of these medications that are, you know, gone through rigorous FDA trials, they present their own health issues with long-term use. And, that's one of the issues that people are dealing with. And now there was a recent article that came out about a study between like 2002 and 2005 where they looked at opioid use. It was funded by NIDA. You may have seen Sam talk about how cannabis access leads to increased opiate use, which would be counterintuitive. And this study I just wanted to debunk for a minute that has made the rounds. And the authors themselves cited about 7 or 8 reasons why their research doesn't really mean very much. One is thing that they left out of the study is that when they started the study, there were about 11 dispensaries open in the country, and they're trying to associate that with an increase, a national increase in opioid use and opioid use disorders. But even the researchers in this study on prescription opioid use based on data that's 16 years ago said that all these results should be interpreted with, quote, caution, unquote, as in it's not meant really to be a policy guiding. It's just a benchmark to show us that this opioid epidemic was beginning and has been going on for a long time. And now that we're seeing more and more safe access centers, more people having access to standardized cannabis products, we're starting to see that the impact of the opioid crisis tempered a little bit in some states, like such as the Baalbacher study. And so with this idea in mind and making cannabis an option for pain, ASA set up November 1st as a National Cannabis as an Opioid Option for Pain Awareness Day. And if you go to safeaccessnow.org/take_action, you can click on 4 really simple links. One is to RSVP for a solidarity event in either Washington, D.C., Idaho, Kansas, Missouri, New Mexico. There are also events going on with groups we've partnered with in Pennsylvania and Illinois, as well as other states. You can find out who's meeting and what they're doing. I believe we just got a march permit in D.C. for November 1st. Also, you can sign a petition, which you should do by November 30th, calling on President Trump to formally declare the opioid epidemic. You can also directly tweet the president from our links, as well as tweet Congress to have them declare the national health emergency.
We hope everyone will get involved with that. Check out safeaccessnow.org for more information on this opioid campaign on November 1st in cities all across America. Dr. Marku, we'd also like to make sure that people are aware of the training that Americans for Safe Access is offering. There's so much to be learned in the field of medical cannabis between the laws, the regulations, and then, of course, the science and the medicine of it. Tell us what's the latest from Americans for Safe Access.
Great. Thank you. So right off the bat, we're doing a live training in Maryland, November 6th and 7th. And this is going to be, first day is going to be kind of a basic introductory course on the 6th. So the core cannabis training you need, through our research that we published last year and helping design a study on the science-based cannabis training, really addressing what people who work at dispensaries need to know, everything from customer care to how to deal with law enforcement interactions. And the second day is what we're calling the Verified Professional Day, where we're actually going to teach much more advanced courses on quality control, quality assurance, and training those people who might be wanting to be inspectors or assessors for regulatory compliance. So this might apply to regulators, people who work at cannabis businesses, people who work for accreditation bodies. This is a day for them to gain a higher level of understanding. How do you go into an operation and take everything we know about cannabis and everything we know about the regs and put that together into a coherent plan to make sure that that business will stay open and survive any scrutiny? And so, you know, November 6th and 7th in Baltimore and in Maryland, you can sign up remotely to take this training. And remember, we're a nonprofit, so these are donations that people are making for the training. And that's one of the things that makes us unique, I think, in the training space, is that this is not something that is going to a private fund. You know, all of our funds are geared towards patient advocacy, doing events like End Pain Not Lives and things like that. So if you want to get educated and support medical cannabis patients, this is a win-win for that. And we are going to have more trainings coming up in December as well, a series of them. We're also going to be potentially doing a training in Memphis, Tennessee, coming up for Louisiana, Tennessee, and Arkansas. Pretty exciting stuff there. I'm actually going to be going next week to speak with their task force about how to implement standards, because you know they're moving forward on cannabis, but there's always some people who are nervous that how will we implement these standards? How will we keep tabs on the good players and the bad players? And by having a voluntary certification that the standards were developed by the industry itself, people will be more likely to adhere to those standards. And so I think those are the big events coming for PFC. And I'd also say, again, we have online modules that are ready to go. So if you go to patientfocuscertification.org, you can sign up for a ton of great courses as well. And if you have any questions, you can email info@patientfocuscertification.org, and we can send you a course guide, more information. We also have a ton of YouTube videos that are getting posted. If you're wondering what we're talking about with this training, one video I'd encourage you to check out on our Safe Access YouTube channel is What to Expect When Being Inspected. And it's a presentation based on my experience training regulators and other inspectors to go into cannabis operations and assess their regulatory compliance. And it discusses how to think like an inspector. What information are they gathering? Are they looking at your application? Are they looking at your Twitter feed? How are they gathering that evidence for an inspection? And so I think What to Expect When Being Inspected is a great one-hour example of the future of regulations, the future of regulatory compliance. And we just recorded a new webinar on innovative extraction methods with John McKay, of former Waters senior director. And he has probably helped install more CO2 extraction equipment in this country than any other single person. And he gave this amazing webinar we'll be updating soon to the YouTube page. He actually gave it last night, where he discussed what's left behind in extraction vessels and actually showed that some extraction processes leave behind potentially thousands of dollars of useful things in what you would normally throw away. And so, you know, there is definitely room when it comes to extraction and innovating in that regard, making it more efficient. And again, potentially saving a lot of money by using science and applying that. And one of the things you want to think about is good is not a number. A lot is not a number. You know, it's really, if you want to be efficient and save a lot of money with extraction, you really have to define what is a lot. Oh, I put in this amount and I got a lot out. Well, how do you know it's a lot? How much did you leave behind when you did that extraction? And so process validation, method validation, and things like that are becoming increasingly more important.
And speaking of the science of extraction, many people out there are just new to the world of medical cannabis, and they're just learning about some of the science behind it, learning about our endocannabinoid system, learning about the different types of cannabinoids that are out there. What do you have at Americans for Safe Access with regards to access to science information?
Well, if you go to safeaccessnow.org/reports, we have very detailed, lengthy reports which have sections in them which address quality control and those standards and provide a lot of good references. And those will give you, so some of them are written as a World Health style report on a medicine. And so it contains all that information you'd want to know. What are the quality standards? What products are available on the market and what are their specifications and how are they regulated? What information is available about those products interacting with our body and what are the short-term and long-term benefits and potential drawbacks of using these different medications. So there's a ton of free information. You know, that's one of the things I love about working at a nonprofit is, you know, our information is usually not behind a paywall. It's member supported, so it goes out into the public. And so we have probably a dozen reports or so, four or five of which were published in the last 12 months, all available on there. We also recently are now working with Ethan Russo. He's joined our partner research institution, the International Cannabis and Cannabinoid Institute, and I'm going to be getting to work directly with him on some research starting early next year. And Ethan and I, Dr. Russo and I, just published a book chapter called Cannabis Pharmacology, The Usual Suspects and a Few Promising Leads. And if you contact us either by social media or through the ASA page, I'd be happy to send people a copy of that book chapter. It's also free and available on ResearchGate, where us academics and nerds go to post our publications. If you don't know about ResearchGate, it's pretty cool. And so I'd encourage people to either check out the reports section of the ASA website or, reach out to Dr. Russo or myself, and we can send you some of the latest research that's been published this year. And there's some really interesting things that are evolving. You know, one of the stories I love sharing with people is osamine, which is this rare terpene, but it seems to be popping up in abundance in California cannabis. And why it's interesting is, one is we don't know what it does with humans, so there's a whole area of research to explore how it might alter the effects of THC or CBD in the human body, for example. But it's also a regulator of honeybees. Honeybees use osamine as a social drug. I don't know if it's like Xanax to them or whatever, but without it, their colonies could collapse or suffer other issues, and it's prevalent in cannabis. And this may be why some people have reported success with making cannabis honey and some have not. But this fact has not been lost on law enforcement. And there's a very cute research paper paid for by taxpayers in which researchers try to train honeybees to detect drugs and say, well, you know, these are actually easier to train and less expensive than German shepherds. And, you know, by commercializing honeybees, we could actually potentially save a lot of the varieties of honeybees out there by developing commercial applications. So unfortunately, you know, it's unclear how many other plants make osamine, which might confuse the bees, but it's still interesting to see that even in this day and age, law enforcement is still very active at looking at diversion and transporting across state lines and are now even employing the insect world to assist with that.
That's amazing. Dr. Jehan Marku is the Chief Science Officer for Americans for Safe Access. The website is safeaccessnow.org. Don't forget the opioid campaign beginning or happening on November 1st. And Dr. Marku, thanks so much for your expertise. We appreciate you joining us here on the Marijuana Agenda.
Thank you so much. And just one last thing. If you want more information about the opioid campaign, email marissa@safeaccessnow.org, and she can answer all your questions and hook you up with any other resources you might need for the National Pain Awareness Day.